Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're stepping aboard, you could say, into the world of luxury airships. Sort of a forgotten giant of the skies. We've gathered some really fascinating historical accounts, you know, from their heyday, and looked at them alongside some of the newer concepts trying to bring them back.
Yeah, it's a dive into a very different way of thinking about travel, isn't it? Leisure versus just speed. And our sources, well, they strongly suggest these airships might have been the most luxurious way to travel ever, period.
Okay, so that's our mission for today, then. Let's really unpack what made that golden age so special, so luxurious beyond just the old photos. And then we need to look at this claim that a modern version, a high-tech one, could actually be the, quote, ultimate way to travel for, you know, the super rich today. So let's start with the past. What was the benchmark like?
Well, the accounts really set the bar incredibly high. You know, people often think of the grand ocean liners, right? The floating palaces. But honestly, the experience on something like the Hindenburg or the Graf Zeppelin, it seems to have consistently surpassed even those.
Really? How so?
It was about the continuity, I think. You're seamlessly moving over land, then sea. The views are constant, always changing. You weren't dealing with, you know, the hassle of docks or train stations. You were just floating above it all.
And the pace itself was key to that luxury feel, wasn't it? I mean, the speed seems almost quaint now.
Oh, absolutely deliberate. Yeah, quaint is a good word. Depending on the winds, you were looking at maybe 40, 45 miles per hour tops. And that slow speed, it shaped everything else. The service, the ability to actually see things. They weren't trying to save time. They were trying to maximize the experience itself.
Right. When you're moving that slowly, the journey really is the destination. The sources constantly mention these unparalleled views. You know, gliding over continents, crossing the ocean. But the service level, I think that's where today's luxury market would really pay attention.
Oh, completely. It was genuinely five-star. We're talking world-class staff. And crucially, a really, really high ratio of staff to passengers. Way better than you'd find on even the fanciest first-class flight or cruise ship today.
So, very personal attention.
Extremely. Every little thing catered for, it created this really intimate atmosphere, and the food, legendary stuff, five-star menus, and they often even incorporated local foods from whatever region they were actually flying over at that moment.
Wow. So it's like a flying, super customized, immersive luxury hotel.
That's a pretty good description, yeah.
Okay, so that paints a picture of incredible comfort, incredible service. But here's where I found it got really, really interesting. It sort of challenges what you might assume about, you know, how high up these things were. We picture these massive Zeppelins way up in the clouds, right? Maybe near where jets fly.
Mm-hmm.
But the sources, they tell a very different story about the actual passenger experience.
That's the magic detail, isn't it? The thing that's almost impossible to imagine replicating perfectly today. A lot of the time, these airships were flying at 1,000 feet. Or even lower.
1,000 feet. That low.
Yeah, sometimes significantly lower, depending on, you know, the terrain or the weather.
That changes everything. I mean, that's not just looking down on tiny dots.
Yeah.
You're practically at eye level with, like, church towers or treetops.
Exactly. And the accounts really detail that sensory experience. You know the famous stories. Passengers literally opening windows that face downward.
And calling down to people on the ground. Farmers, things like that.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Calling down to farmers. Waving. It wasn't like looking through a sealed little window on a plane. It was actual, like, personal interaction with the world below.
And the sound, too. Because sound travels up, right? So they could actually hear things from the ground.
Clearly. They could hear cattle, train whistles in the distance, the sounds of a town or city waking up below them. It must have made the world feel incredibly, well, present. Immediate.
Yeah, not just abstract scenery passing by.
Not at all. And that closeness, it meant they got the best views of landmarks. Imagine gliding silently right over the pyramids or next to Niagara Falls or slowly cruising above Paris or London. That low altitude, that ability to interact, it really defined the unique pace. It was immersive. You chose it because you wanted to savor the journey, to really absorb the landscape, not just get from A to B.
That intimacy.
Yeah.
That connection. That's the real game changer compared to modern travel, which is all about shrinking distance, making it irrelevant. The airship almost celebrated the distance. But okay, that brings up a big question, especially thinking about bringing them back. Flying that low, that slow,
yeah,
you'd be really vulnerable to weather, wouldn't you? Turbulence, sudden wind shifts. How did they manage that back then, and what has to be different now?
And you've hit on one of the key historical challenges, that instability, particularly with ground handling, docking in winds, dealing with storms. That was a major, major operational headache and, frankly, a danger, which leads us right into the future bit. You know, achieving that past luxury safely requires some serious modern tech.
Okay, let's pivot there. So we've got this incredible picture of past luxury. Can modern technology actually bring that back, maybe even improve on it, while fixing those critical safety and stability problems?
Well, the consensus from the people developing modern concepts seems to be a definite yes. A safe, modern airship, using today's materials, today's weather prediction, advanced controls, it could absolutely be the ultimate travel experience. You're basically blending that amazing slow journey feel with, you know, 21st century engineering and safety.
And we're talking about more than just using helium instead of hydrogen, obviously. That's the big one everyone knows. What specific tech makes flying slow and low actually stable and safe now?
Right. Helium is the baseline safety upgrade. But beyond that, it's really about materials and control. Modern composite materials, for instance, they allow for incredibly strong but lightweight structures, much, much better than the old fabric and metal girder frames. And then there's propulsion and control. Modern systems use vectored thrust, often hybrid electric or maybe hydrogen fuel cells down the line.
Vectored thrust, meaning they can direct the push.
Exactly. They can push up, down, sideways, giving them vastly better maneuverability, especially at low speeds. Think docking or holding position against a gust of wind. That kind of precision was just impossible back in the 30s.
Okay, so the materials are stronger and lighter, and advanced thrusters can actively fight instability. That makes the whole low-altitude dream much more practical.
Yeah.
Now, who's the customer? Who's actually going to trade the speed of a private jet for, you know, 40 mile per hour luxury?
Yeah, the sources are pretty unanimous on this. The initial market, the target for the first truly luxurious modern airships, it's the ultra high net worth individual, billionaires basically. And we're talking about the maiden voyages likely being filled with billionaires and their families. It's less about transport, more about owning a unique experience, owning time itself.
Right, it's not just speed they value, it's frictionless living, exclusivity.
That's the core of it. The whole concept revolves around ultimate convenience for that specific group. The vision is that these clients could, you know, quite easily just park their yachts and jets for a week or two, step onto the airship, and continue their life uninterrupted, just airborne. It's designed to be a mobile second home or a floating office or a secure family retreat.
I can see that. Sailing slowly across continents, but with all the comforts, the connectivity, the security of their permanent base. Just with constantly changing incredible views, it reframes travel time from something to endure into something to actually savor.
Precisely. Time is the one thing they can't buy more of, right? An airship journey sort of forces you, in a luxurious way, to slow down and actually be in transit. And thinking about scale, one of the concepts mentioned in the sources, this hypothetical ship called the Times of Carolina, it's described as being way bigger than even the Hindenburg, packed with huge private suites, spas, conference rooms, everything.
Okay, but here's the reality check. We've been hearing about the return of the airship for, well, decades, it feels like. They always seem to be just a few years away. If the tech is getting there, like you said, what's the real holdup? Why aren't we seeing the Times of Carolina being built right now?
That's the multi-billion dollar question, isn't it? It's less about a single piece of missing tech now and more about, well, scale and logistics. Infrastructure, mainly.
Infrastructure, meaning?
Meaning places to take off, land, and crucially, hangar these massive things. The old airships needed enormous sheds, huge ground crews. It was a massive investment. Modern ones need their own specialized infrastructure, too. Maybe different kinds of mooring masts, integrated terminals, building a whole network of these across the globe in key cities and destinations. That takes enormous capital and commitment. That's the bottleneck.
So we have the strong but light materials. We have the smart engines and navigation. We're waiting for someone to build the giant specialized airports for them.
That's a big part of it, yeah. The designs are getting better, the prototypes are flying, people are getting closer to building ships that can do it all, as one source put it, but it needs that huge coordinated investment in the ground support to make it a viable transport system, even for the ultra rich.
That makes sense. It's not just an engineering puzzle, it's an economic and logistical one too.
And interestingly, the economics almost demand that extreme luxury. If you're only carrying, say, 100 or 200 people, but they're paying millions each for a trip,
then the massive cost of the infrastructure starts to look a bit more justifiable.
Exactly. It's easier to make the numbers work for an ultra-exclusive flying hotel than it is for, like, a mass-market cargo airship right now. The luxury enables the whole project, in a way.
Okay, that ties it all together nicely. So to summarize, The luxury back then was definitely real. We're talking five-star food, incredible service, and this unbelievably intimate connection to the world below, flying low and slow. And the appeal today, it's bringing back that immersive slow travel idea, but wrapping it in modern safety, modern comfort, and let's be honest, a huge layer of exclusivity.
Yeah, it really boils down to that contrast, doesn't it? Minimizing travel time versus maximizing the travel experience. That's the choice the modern airship represents.
Which brings us to a final thought for you, our listeners. One of the sources we looked at had this really personal quote, someone saying, "I've been waiting a long time to be first in line for one of these new airships." So the question for you is, in our world that's absolutely obsessed with speed, getting everywhere faster, would you ever trade the efficiency of a jet for the ultimate luxury of maybe a week-long journey in a 40-mile-per-hour hotel drifting through the sky? The destination will still be there, but maybe, just maybe, the journey itself is finally ready to claim your full attention again.